So I feel very much at home, aside from the fact that I'm here every day. Because, like Amy, I have a hopelessly warped sense of humor. And like Rabbits in Brussels, I feel as if I've done wrong everything that I'm going to say not to do today. So, having said that, before I start, that's why I feel comfortable. This is why I feel uncomfortable. Revitson Pavlov is going to speak to you about people who don't have what most people do have and want desperately. Amy is going to speak to you about people who have lost what most people have and want desperately. I'm here to speak to you, but I have. And I almost feel like I don't quite belong. Because at the end of the day, I have a son with special needs who for many years had chronic respiratory illness, but I have him. He says, "Ima, I love you so much," because he'd rather do that than go to bed. And we love him to bits. Whereas other people have an aching gap, we have a lot of extra work. But at the end of the day, we have our child. I have tremendous hakaras hatov to Kodesh Baruch Hu that he's ours, that he's alive and with us. And we really love him just the way he is. So if I may sound a little bit negative at any point, I'd like you to remember at all times, that behind it all, we have tremendous hakaras hatov that we have, and we recognize that it's very different than those who don't have. Okay, so my credentials, as I said, are very simple. Special needs, chronic illness, been there, done that. Okay. Now, it doesn't necessarily go together. There are many people with special needs who are basically healthy. There are many people who are chronically ill who don't have any other special needs. They just have chronic pain or depression or MS or some other kind of chronic illness. But they do have many things in common. And one of the things they have in common is that it doesn't go away. You live with it 24/7. It's always there. You go on with your life because that's what you want to do. But it's just there all the time. You can look fine and you can be fine. But there will be an underlying pain. It may be a physical pain in the case of certain kinds of chronic illness. But it's often, in addition to that, an emotional pain, and it'll gush out when you least expect it. Like every single morning when I put my son on the Hatsa'ah, so like I just put my son on the bus, right? So there's fine, like Baruch Hashem, I'm grateful that there is a bus and I don't have to drive into the other side of the city, and I'm grateful that there's this school, and then every once in a while, out of nowhere, as I see my neighbor's kid going to cheder, and my son's not, I go, I'm fine. I look fine and I am fine, but sometimes it just hurts. Okay. Now sometimes, and maybe even most of the time, you just want to be normal. In my case, being normal is probably, bracha levatela, but you just want to be normal and go on with your life like everyone else. And sometimes you just don't want to, or sometimes you just can't. And no matter how many well-meaning people tell you, don't let it take over your life, there are times when there's no choice. And it does take over your life. And it just has to be that way. So that's what I'd like you to understand about me. So here I am, Chaya Taven, wife, mother, neighbor, teacher. I like the things I like, and I like the things that I like. I'm good at things I'm good at. I'm not good at lots of things. The opposite. I'm me, right? Here I am, me. Lived in the neighborhood, got a bunch of kids, and then had another baby, Baruch Hashem. And he was cute. It was just that he was like blue and not breathing. It was not a good thing. And floppy. And, I saw his face, so I didn't really need them to tell me what they thought. Called Rebbe in Brussels, she should be bench, and I said, just tell everybody. So now am I Chaya Taven as a kid who doesn't breathe and has extra chromosomes? Which is what Down syndrome really is all about. I mean, that's not what it's all about, that's what the doctors say. But anyway, okay, so actually this is the thing. I am still me. I still like all the things that I liked before. I still appreciate all the things that I appreciated before. I definitely learned to appreciate quite a few things that I didn't appreciate before, like sleeping through the night without an oxygen monitor going, all my kids, like every once in a while when somebody wants to annoy somebody else, they're like, check it! I once had a discussion with a woman I know who had a child with far more complicated, both medical and special needs child, and we were comparing life in the neonatal intensive care unit. And she happens to be extraordinarily musical, and I'm also a little bit musical, and we were talking about like the tone of the beats. And I was just like going to me like dancing to the monitors that are saying your kid is not healthy. Okay. So I've learned to appreciate that. I didn't appreciate that before. Right? And I certainly learned to appreciate the wonder of a baby learning to pick up its head or roll over or sit up. And then I started having grandchildren, and I was like, wow! She picked up her head! And we didn't go to therapy or anything! And I have to say that all of us gained that appreciation. My daughter, who we used to call the Achot HaRashit, which is like a play on the Hebrew, the meaning like main sister / head nurse, who helped me a tremendous amount in the early years with my son, then married and started having her own children, family, Baruch Hashem. And, you know, she also has this, and she keeps saying, this heightened awareness of the glory of a kid learning to do something, like when you just leave him alone, and he does it anyway. So clearly, I've learned to appreciate things that I didn't appreciate before, but I also still like to eat, and I still like the dry wine that Amy brings me. But she comes for Shabbos, and I appreciate a good Dvar Torah, and I still cry at those, you know, moving stories or like a really well played. In other words, I'm me. So that's very nice. But you come to hear about me, maybe you came to hear about my kid, but you came to hear you could help. So I'll tell you, that's the first thing to know. I'm still me. That's who I am. I have not turned into holy woman because Hashem only tests the strong. Okay, so speak less and hurt about you, and then I won't be strong, and then my kid will be healthy. I mean, come on, you know. No, I didn't turn into a holy woman. I make mistakes. You know, I fail. I laugh and I cry and I make mistakes. And I make mistakes because I'm so tired that I make stupid mistakes. But I also make mistakes just because I'm human. And I make mistakes. And I also make mistakes because working on Midos is a lifelong vocation, and I haven't, you know, retired yet. Right? So I make mistakes. I didn't become this holy, special, she's so amazing! A few of my friends and I, who also have kids with special needs, have this like running joke about Hagerty's halo polish. You know, it's a polish. So, like, I'm me, just like I was before, only, admittedly, more so. Which means that if anything defines life with a child with special needs or life with chronic illness, that's it. It's life. Like, but in fifth gear. It's life, but more so. Okay. So what does that mean for you, practically speaking? If you have a relationship with a mother of a child with special needs, or with a caretaker of a family member who's chronically ill. So remember, your friend's life has been unalterably changed forever. We're talking about things that don't go away. When my son was first born, they're like, whatever, he's cute now, he looked cute then. It's like people would look, they say, are you sure he has Down syndrome? I say, no, you know what, I made it up because I wanted the disability payment. 800 shekel a month is going to really get me over the top. I made it up! Wouldn't you? Okay. So, but she's still who she was before, which means that, in the words of an all-too-experienced friend, how you deal with any particular parent or family member is really depends on who they were to begin with. This particular friend, unfortunately, had a child who died of cancer, and then many years later had a child with extremely complicated medical needs. When she knew her son was dying, she said that she attended the funeral of somebody who she had met in Sloan Kettering, whose child had also died, and the mother was crying hysterically, which, you know, I think would be a normal reaction. And she said she went home and said, oh no, like, I'm going to be like that. And then at her son's funeral, clearly she was crying, but not hysterically. And she realized, like, I just have to reteach. I didn't become who I wasn't. I'm still who I am. She doesn't feel the pain any less, but who she was then is who she is now. So let's not put those people into a box. Mother, child with special needs, person with chronic illness. Whoever she was before, that's who she is now. Okay. So, you know, my life has certainly become more complex. I was given an honorary degree in pediatric pulmonology by my son's pediatrician and the pulmonologist. Both of them happen to be nice guys. That's long stuff. I learned more long Latin words than I ever thought that I would know. And when you pronounce them in Hebrew, they're really funny. But remember, we're not, oh, never have such a child, or they are so special! No, not this and not that. I'm me with an extra chromosome's worth of stuff to do to take care of my kid. That's that. Okay, now. Just want to throw something quickly in before I get to the next, hopefully humorous, but learning scenario. This past Shabbos, one of the mitzvahs that was in the parsha, was the mitzvah that somebody who owns a field, the portions that that person leaves for certain categories of people. So what's the categories of people? So it's poor people, orphans and widows, and converts. So, okay, so people are poor. Poor, orphans and widows, don't have somebody to support them, and converts, because they don't belong to any tribes at the time when the Jewish people lived, and the land was given out by tribes, so they don't have any land. So, okay, it's fine. So one of my kids asked a very obvious question. But then those extra categories, they're poor. Like the orphan and widow, so they're poor. So they should be able to pick because they're poor. And the converts are poor if they don't have land, so they should be able to pick because they're poor. So it's a good question. And I think this is the answer. I've been asked on several occasions to speak to post-high school girls in the Beis Yaakov system who are studying special education in order to tell them what the parents would like the professional staff to know. And I do speak a lot about sensitivity issues. And I remember once this girl raised her hand and said, like, well, like, are we really like responsible for your emotional well-being? You know, like, she said it nicely, but that was basically what she said. Am I responsible for your emotional well-being? Like, I'm here to, you know, get your kid to do something. So I said, well, no, but yes. And I think that this is the answer also to my daughter's question. When somebody has something that kind of out-of-the-box, unusual, extra challenge, it requires additional sensitivity. Poverty is poverty. But even if that widow or orphan has a little bit of extra money socked aside, or even if that convert happens to be like the world's best Fuller Brush Man and therefore has lots of money from going door-to-door and selling, they're still in, as Rebbetzin Russell put so eloquently, a vulnerable situation. And that vulnerability requires extra sensitivity on our part. Okay, and having that in mind, we'll go into the following scenario. Mommy Plonita is at the park. Okay, so she's there with a bunch of kids. One of the children has special needs. He acts special, or he looks special. Let's say he's got a tube up his nose, or coming out of his stomach, or he's in a wheelchair, or he's dysmorphic, which means his face looks different than other people's face. So that's, most chromosomal disorders have something called dysmorphia, which means your face looks funny. Okay. Okay. And, or he looks perfectly normal, but he's behaving really strange. Let's say he's something on the autistic spectrum disorder. So the only way for him to have fun is to go to the tree, walk around it 16 times, take 3 steps away from the tree, dig a hole for exactly 4.5 minutes, and then go back and walk around the tree 16 more times. Now, this makes him feel good. Doesn't hurt anybody. It looks strange to you, right? And Mrs. Plonita is used to it because that's who her kid is. But you're kind of looking and wondering what that kid is all about. Now, Mrs. Plonita is at the park with her kid in a wheelchair or with a tube up his nose, or, you know, who's going around the tree 16 times or whatever it is. And you're also at the park, and you see the special kid. Now, the kid is identifiably special. So we said either you see it on the face, or there's tubes coming out of him someplace, or he's behaving in an obviously differently abled, whatever you want to say, quote, word. Okay, so Now, you have a friend who has a neighbor who has a kid who has Upsa-Fleugen syndrome. And you see this kid, this kid has Upsa-Fleugen syndrome also. I mean, that hasn't yet been identified by the medical community, but I can several of my, okay, whatever. Okay, Upsa-Fleugen syndrome. So you know this friend whose neighbor, whose kid, whose cousins, whose neighbor, whose mailman's sister has Upsa-Fleugen syndrome. And these people are amazing. They're amazing. They took the kid to East Kishinev for 6 months to do this, like, incredible therapy, and then they came home and they do these exercises 12 times a day, and they take him every week to Kiryat Shmona, to this alternative doctor who gives them potions and incantations, and now the kid looks normal. Normal. Don't you want to share this advice with Mrs. Clonita? I'll bet you do, because you're a nice person and you want to help. So I'll fill you in on a little secret. Mrs. Clonita knows all about East Kishinev, Kiryat Shmona, the exercises, the potions, and the incantations. I promise you, she does. She also knows all about Mr. and Mrs. Perfect, who have made their child with special needs a candidate for the Nobel Prize. I promise you, she knows. So if she's chosen not to do any of these things, it might just be because, she thinks it won't work in her child's case. She thinks it didn't really work with that kid, but she's keeping her mouth shut on that one because she's sensitive, because she listened to Rebbitz and Bessel. Or maybe she doesn't think it's worth the price of uprooting her family or impoverishing them financially or emotionally in order to make this child get the Nobel Prize. Or maybe she doesn't need a Nobel Prize in order to love and appreciate her child. Or maybe she really wishes that she could do everything that Mr. and Mrs. Perfect do. But she can't. And she is racked with guilt. And when you come over and tell her all about Mr. and Mrs. Perfect, you have just poured salt into a festering wound. So we're not going to do that anymore. Okay, good. So let's say we're a bit better than that. We're not going to tell Mrs. Clonita what to do. So you notice her son. We're still at the park. We'll leave the park in a few minutes, don't worry. You notice your son and you come over and you say, hi, and you introduce yourself and you start talking about other kids you know with Upsa-Fleugen syndrome and how much nachas their families have from them. And you wax eloquent about these children. So Mrs. Clonita's 12-year-old, she got roped into coming to the park to help with the kids, right? She starts rolling her eyes. Now, 12-year-olds are very good at rolling their eyes, but 12-year-old siblings of children with special needs who are sick of hearing about how wonderful their families are even better at rolling their eyes. So the 12-year-old starts rolling her eyes. The 4-year-old or the 6-year-old or whatever it was year old who was having some quiet time with mommy, finally, right, he wanders off to find something else to do because, here we go again. And what about little Upsa-Fleugen? Well, I'll tell you about my little Upsa-Fleugen. He is tired of being spoken about as if he is a museum exhibit. Exhibit A. And he's been unable to express this in a manner which people seem to understand. Now, it could be because he's nonverbal, or it could be that he's very verbal, but he just hasn't quite figured out how to get to every single human being on the face of the globe. And therefore, he does the only thing that seems to make sense to him, which is he wants to stop the conversation. So he does the most effective thing possible, and he throws a shovel full of sand at the kid in the sandbox, and that's the end of the conversation about Upsa-Fleugen syndrome. Just the other day, my son overheard somebody say something like, don't do that, it makes you look retarded, right? And he said, would you like it if someone calls you retarded? I don't like it either. Good for him. Okay. On the other hand, it could be that Mrs. Clonita is sitting there feeling like things are just hard. And she just needs chizuk. And she wished she knew what to do about this medical issue or this therapeutic issue, or she just wished that someone would make her feel better about the difficulty of her situation. And out of nowhere comes this angel of mercy telling her how wonderful her little Upsaflogin is, and also giving her the name of a doctor who helped her kid who also had severe glycholitis, you know, and which little Upsaflogin has, or the name of the therapist who helps kids with obsessive sand throwing, right? And after speaking to this caring stranger who came out of nowhere, Mommy Plonisa feels better, and she has the cough to go on with her day with a smile on her face. So she calls up the doctor, and he cures the glycolitis, or she goes to the therapist and stops the kid from throwing sand, and this makes it into Hamodiah's Hashgacha Pratis section, you know, and everybody, and we're all inspired by the chesed of a stranger, and Darkei Hashem are so wonderful. So what's the point of this? And now what do I do? Because if I go up to her and I start talking to her and telling her what to do, so maybe she'll cry. And if I go up to her and I tell her how great her kid is, so maybe it's going to annoy her entire family. But if I don't go up to her and I can really make her feel better, so then I won't make it into Hamodiah. So the point of this story is in the wise words of a friend who has several children with special needs: one man's poison is another man's medicine. So what do you do? You're here, so I know you want to know. What do I say? How can I help? I can only share my experiences, and I just want to tell you the research that I did for this included speaking to mothers of children with behavioral, medical, physical, and cognitive issues, so that I would living both in the United States and in Israel, so that I would, all of them were religious because of the ones I know, just so I kind of would get a little broader picture, and they all kind of, we all seem to be on the same page, interestingly enough. So I can only tell you what my experiences and my friends who have shared their experience with me, and I know that others will have had different experiences and they'll feel differently, but that's the point. There's no recipe. It's like somebody who wants me to come over and show them how I made something for Shabbos. There's also no recipe. Just kind of throw things in and hope for the best. But you don't want to just throw things in and hope for the best. You want to come out with the right words. So there's no recipe how to deal with a mother of a child with special needs or the caretaker of a chronically ill family member, except that of sensitivity, which is why we're here. Your chizuk and advice may be appreciated, but it might be the last thing I want to hear right now. So here's the key, I hope. Before you speak, ask yourself, why am I saying this? Is it in response to an inner need that I have to say something or to do something? Is it because I feel uncomfortable doing nothing? Or am I sensing the need coming from you? Am I reading your tone of voice, your facial expressions, your body language? In other words, am I responding to my needs or your needs when I open up my mouth? And conversely, with my silence, is my silence because I just feel uncomfortable and I don't know what to say? Or is it a response to Mrs. Plonita's need to be treated like every other mother in the park? It requires a tremendous amount of self-knowledge and intellectual honesty, but as Rebbetzin Brussel inspired us, it is accessible. Personally, I was never offended by somebody asking me, how's your son doing, da 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 da. And we'll speak in a moment about opening lines that can give the mother a chance to answer the way she wants to. I generally appreciate other people's expressions of concern, but if I ever feel, and it's happened on occasion, that somebody is only asking me because they need to, like, you know, this person never spoke to me before, and never speaks to me, but always talks to me about this child. So I get pretty sick of it. Okay. So, like I said, I have several friends with various and sundry issues that they're dealing with, and I ask them for concrete suggestions, which I try to put into this. So a sensitive friend wrote me the following. I'm not your typical park mommy, she said about herself, because I asked her what she thought about the Plonita scenario, because I worked in Mishkan. Mishkan is a camp for children with special needs in America. She also happened to grow up with an uncle with special needs, so she is far more sensitive than your average person out there. But I'm recalling park encounters that were very successful. I think mainly because I acknowledged the child's needs but didn't actually say much. So she gave two examples. One was she happened to be in the park. She saw a child with Down syndrome who also had severe medical issues. And she just sort of, who happened to be looking good that day, which was rare, and she sort of said, "Oh, your daughter looks good today." And that was that, you know, and then the mother opened up and she started talking. She was in a park another time, a different city, and she saw a kid in a wheelchair, and I assumed that she sort of knew who this mother was, and she said, "Oh, is that a new model?" You know, like, okay, so now, what was successful, helpful, and effective in this approach? In both cases, the mothers opened up and started talking. So what was effective and helpful in her approach is that she left room in her questioning for the mother to say yes and then change the subject. She could have gone on to the weather, what to do with the kids on Lag BaOmer, the price of bananas in Osher Ad. In other words, she could have taken that, like, "Your daughter looks good today, yeah, thanks," and then finished. She could have taken that, "Is that a new model? Yeah, we just got it," and then finished. Sort of as an extension of this, if you ask, you know, how is your daughter, how are you managing, that allows a person to say Baruch Hashem, which is that great from closure word, you know, like, and then change the subject, or, and in this case, you better have meant it when you asked, which was probably, by the way, why my sensitive friend was so effective, because she means it when she asks. How are you managing? You better be ready to hear a 45-minute vent of how managing. In other words, this sensitive questioning can lead to empathic listening, in which the mother or the caretaker is allowed to control the extent of the information that's shared, the amount of time that's spent discussing it. You don't work for the Mossad or the KGB or the CIA, and she appreciates that. Okay. So I touched a little bit on the scenario with little Osiflug and flinging the sand. I just want to reiterate the issue of considering the feelings of the child, the sick family member. Anyone ever been hospitalized? Right. So you know how demeaning it is to be, you know, again, exhibit A, the pneumonia in bed 4. It's demeaning. It's demeaning and depersonalizing to be related to that way. So my son has told me in no uncertain terms that he does not, shown me in word and deed, that he does not want his medical situation to be discussed in front of him. As far as he's concerned, ani bari, which means I'm healthy, which he said in the ambulance the last time on the way to the hospital. Ani bari, ani bari. Well, kiddo, this time I'm going to have to disagree with you. So if you want the gory details about his respiratory issues, tough, no. And I want to share them with you. Do me a big favor and ask me not in front of him, because he can hear you. It's true he's retarded, but he's not stupid. He knows exactly what you're talking about. It's uncomfortable. He has feelings like you have feelings, and I assume you wouldn't want your medical situation discussed on the corner of Shalz and High Tiber in front of Yesh, so neither does he. I actually wrote a letter. When you have a kid with special needs, you have to go to all of these va'adot, what do you call them, boards. You know, like every couple of years, you have to reconvince them that your child still has Down syndrome, because maybe he lost the extra chromosome along with the 57 yarmulkes that he lost. Okay, right? So they sit there and they ask you questions about the kid in front of him. So I finally wrote a big letter in bold type, and I put it in the front of all the papers, you know, the papers from the doctor and the paper from the school, and it sort of says, like, "Dear person, he's also a person. You want to ask me questions about him? Send him to play." Okay, so now, atypical children, so, you know, this is kids with special needs, people with medical issues, have a problem. This is their problem, aside from the issue. Lots of people know about them, and they don't know those lots of people. Or people don't particularly know them, but, oh, you know, you worked in Camp Simcha, you volunteered in Zichron Menachem, you love kids with Down syndrome, and you're a total stranger, and you're walking down the street, and you honestly and truly are drawn to this child. So I bet you want to come over and say hi, right? Admit it. I have to admit that, like, whenever I'm out someplace and I see, like older kids with Down syndrome, but I'm always, like, trying to, you know. Usually I end up, like, introducing myself to the mother, and the okay, whatever, fine, okay. So I know you want to come over and say hi, because he's really cute, right? But he doesn't know you. I mean, some of them he does. He told me the other day, "I saw your Tell Me That on the bus, and she sent Dash." Now, I don't know when he was on the bus, but I guess he just wanted to have that experience. Anyway, he also told me the following thing the other day, really just the other day, as I was preparing this. I don't like it when people make faces at me. So I assumed he meant the stare. You know the stare? That's what I assumed he meant. So I asked him to show me. So he showed me that. He went like this. And then he said, vegan, and also... That's sickly, sweet. Come over and start talking to me even though I have no idea who you are. Because you're cute, Faith. So do me a favor. Before you approach a child who doesn't know who you are, so remember the following. Just because someone has obvious facial features, a hearing aid, a wheelchair, tubes, IV poles, oxygen tanks, or anything else, it doesn't make them public property. They're not public property. You would introduce yourself to any other person before you started to talk to them, and you would only start to talk to them if you had a reason to talk to them and a way for the conversation to go. So I know you see this child and you just want to say hi because you're being nice. So introduce yourself first and don't ask him, what's your name? How old are you? Do you want me to come over to you and ask you? No, some of you for sure. What's your name? How old are you? Especially if you have no place to go with that conversation. If the conversation's not going to go anywhere, so then just stop it before it starts. You can nod and smile. The mother, we like that, I have to say. You know, you walk down the street and someone looks at me and looks at him and they smile and I go, my kid's cute. Okay. So, especially with illness, a friend who is struggling with chronic illness in the family, she seems to be one rung between crisis mode on a constant basis. She looks like she's coping. She's not. When you live with chronic illness, you have to get on your life because that's best for everybody. It's best for the caretaker. It's best for the patient. Now, when it gets acute, like some of you might have noticed, like for all of other, you just sort of disappear from your life because if your kid is in the hospital and on oxygen 24/7, you have no choice. However, when you're dealing with a chronic situation, you can't put your life on hold, and you don't want to. Someone is suffering from chronic fatigue, pain, depression. She looks fine on the outside. Don't you want to tell her to just get up and get on with her life? Don't. Okay. She would if she could, but she can't. Telling her to snap out of it won't help. Or, alternatively, you don't realize just how challenged she is because she's struggling to look like she's managing. But when you ask her to do just this little chesed, could you say 5 prakim of Tehillim every day for this kid who's having an operation? And she said no, believe her! And leave her alone. Sensitivity and helpfulness of friends and neighbors have certainly made all the difference in my life. I have to say at this point that the administration, staff, and student body of Shaarim have been amazing in their helpfulness, support, and sensitivity, both in terms of technical and emotional support throughout our little crises. Somebody is chronically ill, or a caretaker of somebody is chronically ill, and you say, let's go out for ice cream, and she says she can't go, so believe her. Don't tell her, but you look fine, or it'll be good for you to get out. Thanks. You make the arrangements. Or you ask Mommy Plonita, you know, this is really amazing. Shira, and I know you really love to hear this Rebbetzin speak. I really want to go, but I just don't think I can get out. So, can I help make arrangements so that you feel you can get out? Or if you just don't feel comfortable leaving him tonight because he's not looking so good, can I tape it for you? Practical, real. Don't deny that it's difficult. Don't comment on it. Just see what you can do on a practical. Can I tape it for you? You look stressed. I'm sending you dinner. Do your kids like spaghetti? I had a neighbor who used to come to the door every time he went to the dry cleaner. Every time he went to the dry cleaner. I have a lot of sons. They wear suits. This was helpful. Okay. Offering to take siblings here and there. I have a good friend who calls on a regular basis when we're in medical crisis mode. I'm in the car, what do you need? So the last time she did that, what I needed was an extra oxygen tank from Yad Sarah. And you believe you me, that was very helpful. On the mark, I'm available right now to help you. This is what I can do. I'm out anywhere. Can I go and get something? Making phone calls, volunteering. Okay, so I know you're all very busy people. And most of you are not sitting around to make my phone calls or drive my kids to their extracurricular activities or, you know, spend hours and hours and hours in the kitchen feeding them. Most of you might have time to drop a line, I love the way Amy and Rebbetzin Bressel described. Whatever practical assistance you can offer is appreciated. What you can't do, you can't do. Believe me, I understand it because I know what I can't do. I have a long list of friends and neighbors and students who I'd like to do more for, but I can't. So I can still thank you. I can thank you for treating me as a whole person for whom this challenge is a part of my life, but not my entire reality. And I can thank you because your heartfelt and sincere expressions of concern and caring are appreciated.